Since taking office, the Trump administration has enacted policy change after policy change in an effort to deter migrants and asylum seekers from entering the United States. If you're having trouble keeping up with these changes, you're not alone. Beyond the headlines, many of these policy changes are being challenged in court, leaving immigration attorneys and those seeking to migrate to this country in a state of confusion. Here to help us get through some of these is Dara Lind, immigration reporter with ProPublica. Dara, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. I apologize for the state of the news.
I was just going to say, before we get into specifics, I mean, can you help us understand, is there a strategy here beyond deterrence that the Trump administration is trying to employ, or is confusion part of that strategy?
So deterrence certainly isn't nothing. And I think even beyond that, the administration has gotten used to the fact that everything it proposes via the executive branch is going to be challenged in court, usually in the Ninth Circuit, and is going to be held up at least temporarily. And so they're doing a couple of things. One, they're getting everything that they assume will be challenged out the door so that they can get it up to a Supreme Court that they think might be more favorable to them, although the Supreme Court has not been quite as amenable to them as they might like. And they're trying to use provisions in the Immigration and Nationality Act that go beyond just the standard, well, we're the executive branch, so we can do this.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the strategy that the president employed or the administration employed with Guatemala, because with Mexico, at least from what we understand, there were threats of increased tariffs on Mexico if Mexico did not play nice with the U.S. government and work with them to deter migrants from coming into our country. There was also talk of the Trump administration imposing tariffs on Guatemala. Is that how did they basically were they able to strong arm Guatemala into doing this?
That is certainly how it appears. We know that the Trump administration was working on signing this type of agreement with Guatemala, which is generally called a safe third country agreement. Neither the Trump Department of Homeland Security nor the Guatemalan government is calling it that. Donald Trump is calling it a safe third agreement because Donald Trump is often off message for his own administration. But that's the general term for this kind of treaty. And we know that they were working on something with the Guatemalan government up until a couple of weeks ago when the Guatemalan High Court, their constitutional court, issued a ruling saying that the president of Guatemala, who is leaving in several months and who the front runner in their presidential race has said that they are not supportive of that agreement. And the High Court said, you can't sign this without consulting our legislature. And the legislature is also strongly opposed to this kind of agreement with the U.S. because Guatemala doesn't really have much of an asylum system to speak of. They have approved zero asylum applications in 2019 so far. So this is expecting the Guatemalan system to exist in a way it really doesn't. So there is going to be a constitutional crisis in Guatemala because of the pressure that the Trump administration has put on the Guatemalan government. We just don't know if that's going to result in this treaty kind of being a dead letter or whether it's going to be imposed over the wishes of two-thirds of the Guatemalan government.
Now, there was, moving on, there was an asylum policy change last week that was blocked by a U.S. judge. Some were calling the change an asylum ban. What was the policy change and what would it have done?
So it's actually really helpful to think about this after the Guatemalan agreement because this was a regulation, so just unilaterally imposed by the Trump administration, that said if you crossed through another country before arriving in the U.S. and did not apply for asylum there, you are not eligible for asylum here either. So that would have applied not only to to the Salvadorans and Hondurans and other nationalities who are now affected by this you didn't cross through Guatemala policy, but also to Guatemalans who had crossed through Mexico. And after, given the kind of continued delays in processing asylum seekers, especially at ports of entry where people have been waiting for weeks or months, it did mean that some people who had been trying to follow the rules were now kind of being locked out. That ruling did not last for very long. It's not clear whether anyone was actually deported under it before it got blocked. It got blocked after about 8 days on the books. And it got blocked by the same judge who blocked the asylum ban that they attempted to put in place last fall, which would have blocked asylum for anyone who crossed between ports of entry. And the judge, you know, it wasn't as open and shut a case as last fall was, but the judge said, look, Congress has put a couple of standards in place for if you've been in another country for long enough that you have resettled there, you don't get to then claim asylum in the United States. Or if you've signed one of these agreements with another government, then you get to say that people can't claim asylum based on that. But the existence of those strongly implies that Congress didn't mean that if you didn't just arrive in the U.S. directly, that you wouldn't be able to claim asylum.
There's another recent policy change that would expand expedited removals of undocumented migrants by ICE. What is the status with that policy and who is it most at risk now?
So this is unlike the regulation or the kind of Guatemalan agreement. This, in theory, could be in place immediately. It just issued as a notice because that's another authority that they have under the Immigration and Nationality Act to just kind of expand the use of this. And we don't know a lot about how it's being put in place. We know that before last week, the U.S. government could deport you without a court hearing if you had been caught within 100 miles of the a border, and if you couldn't show that you had been in the U.S. for more than 2 weeks. They've now expanded that so that you can, in theory, be removed without a court hearing if you're arrested anywhere in the U.S., and if you can't demonstrate that you've been physically present for at least 2 years. That's a huge jump, and it's not at all clear how they plan to, you know, whether ICE agents are going to be allowed to just assess whether someone's been in the U.S. for 2 years based on what they're carrying on their person at the time they are arrested, whether there's going to be some kind of procedure in place for people to, like, get documents that they may not be carrying with them in order to show an agent that they've been in the U.S. for 2 years. So if you, in theory, because there's no sort of judicial review here, if you can't go before a judge to plead your case, the possibility of error here is massive. I mean, we've just had a very high profile case of someone with a U.S. passport being detained by ICE for weeks on the, you know, on the argument that he was falsely claiming to be a U.S. citizen because they weren't reviewing those documents. The possibility that someone who is not only that, like, long resident unauthorized immigrants who have been here for more than 2 years couldn't prove that, but that people who are actually legal immigrants or even U.S. citizens might not have whatever documents they need with them at the time to demonstrate 2 years of what's called continuous physical presence is a really big one. And so there are lots of very live questions about how exactly ICE plans to use this, whether it's something they're actually going to use on a regular basis or whether it's just kind of another thing that they're doing to just send the message to immigrants that they're not really safe.
Dara Lind is an immigration reporter with ProPublica. Dara, thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.